everybody, we're the Marvel Movie News. Today we're going to be talking about some Spider-Man, we're going to talk about ABC and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and we're going to talk about some Thor Ragnarok set picks, and we don't know if you know it, but Luke Cage trailer dropped today. We're probably going to talk about that. So sit right there, we'll be with you in like 10 seconds after you watch a popcorn bucket protect itself from bullets.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now... here's Popcorn Talks.
Like, I think I'm getting better at them.
You got the comforts nice. There.
Yeah, like, I feel like I've finally sort of, like...
It's my favorite part of the show.
So you're done. You can leave.
No, I mean, dude, I love just, like, spieling at people and being like, you don't get to interrupt. I'm going to say all the things. I mean...
Well, you should do the cold open from now on.
We'll switch.
Oh, okay, we'll switch it up. We are the Marvel Movie News coming to you live from Seagate Prison. Is that good? Seagate Prison, I believe it's in Georgia, am I right? Where we tell you all the news from all the studios and why you should be as excited as we are. I considered saying the Gem Theater, but then I thought people might actually be confused and wonder if we've moved locations to the Gem. Because, like, Seagate Prison, obviously we're not coming from there.
No.
Like we're not in Seagate Prison, but we could be coming to you from a theater called the Gem Theater.
We're the one gym in New York, that's where we are.
Yeah.
That one gym.
That one gym.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only one gym in New York.
And it's
I don't know if you like
that's
you
a
know
fictional
about
gym.
It. Like, you know, you got to be in
well,
do I
do
I look like
lived,
I know about it?
You have to have
everyone.
Lived in Hell's Kitchen as I did for a number
do
of years.
Do I look like I know about a gym, let alone the one in New York? I don't.
I'm ready.
Subscribe to us on iTunes at Marvel Movie News or find us at the youtube.com/Popcorn Talk Network. You can also find us on their website, popcorntalknetwork.com. Follow us on Twitter at Marvel News PTN or at The Popcorn Talk. Also on Facebook / Marvel News Show. And guys, if you'll tweet a link out to our show with a message telling people about the live chat, Doom will retweet you from his booth in Latveria.
Doom demands tweets and your thoughts on Luke Cage. Also demands the photos that Matt sent for Luke Cage.
What, Matt sent those photos to you. Does Doom not have
Google
them?
Google does not respect Matt Keith.
that's
true.
Obvious.
That's very true.
Doom, do you need me to resend you those photographs?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I've only got a shorter
live
one, Doom.
Live.
I'm Matt Key at the Matt Key. We are joined by Markia. What's your Twitter?
You can follow me on Markia McCarty. That's MarkiaMccarty. Same thing for Instagram, Snapchat's Darth Thin Mix.
Ooh, Darth Thin Mints. I like it. Yeah. That's really nice. We've also got Coy over there. Coyjandraau.
Sure.
Skip it about bit do. And we're joined by Alan Kissler, the Sizzler himself.
Hey, guys.
Alan, what do you have going on these days? What are you entertaining the audience while I resend pictures?
That sounds good.
Doop, 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 doop. Go for it, Alan.
Yeah, we just put out, me and a few psychologists just put out one of our latest pop culture psychology books. We've done The Walking Dead Psychology, Star Trek Psychology is coming out, and right now in bookstores like Barnes & Noble and Amazon, you can find Captain America vs. Iron Man, Freedom,
Ooh.
Security, and Psychology, which is all about the psychological implications and moral implications of how each character deals with the world, whether it's about directly civil war or just their takes on life. I co-wrote a chapter on masculinity expectations and how they both either meet them or challenge them, and how extremely limiting and damaging masculinity expectations in Western culture can be. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's out in Barnes & Noble right now. If you are at Bookstar on Ventura, there are a few signed copies there still.
Because you just did a signing there.
Yeah, I just did a
right?
little signing there.
That's
and,
really interesting because they both come from different decades. So it's like, what's masculinity for each?
Well, also, you've got Iron Man is sort of going very typical masculinity expectations, probably based on his father, where it's
right.
just like, you know, what makes a man? You drink, you talk hard, you act like you own the place even if you don't. You remind people who's the smartest and who's the successful guy. You know, you lead, you just automatically assume a leadership role. You sleep around, and it's not until he has this traumatic experience that he starts re-examining his life and thinking, oh, I've done wrong, or I've done certain things which I thought were important to attain success, and in the process, I've unleashed things that I need to take responsibility for. And he starts, like, scaling back. And with Cap, you have an interesting thing where he stands up to bullies, but it's not to look like a man. It's more of a moral obligation, because he doesn't expect to win. And it's not about getting respect. It's just, they will not bully me. And that's a very different thing. And we talk about how he just has this thing where even when he's in a leadership position, like, he will express his doubts. And he will talk to people about his fears and question things. And he's got that rebellious streak. But he's got more of a familial, almost what we would typically think of like as feminine or mother hen approach to people where like, I've got to protect the family.
Well, it's more like a responsibility.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I mean, that's all Civil War, the movie. Mm. Like he's not just motivated by, I think this is morally wrong. It's I got to protect my boy.
Yeah, no, it's like being responsible for things outside of just yourself.
Yeah, kind of things. Yeah. So I mean, they both fit some stuff, and they both challenge some stuff, and we just talk about that. And likewise, we talked about masculinity expectations.
And what book is that in?
That is in Captain America versus Iron Man: Freedom, Security, and Psychology.
You heard it here first, everybody. Alan Kissler has a book.
There's also the other books: Doctor Who: A History,
Game of Thrones, unofficial cookbook.
Unofficial Game of Thrones cookbook. And the unofficial Batman trivia challenge and the unofficial Spider-Man trivia challenge.
If you didn't know it, Alan Kissler likes to write.
A little bit. I dig it.
All right.
That's... I dig it. It pays bills. Oh, and my podcast, Crazy Sexy Geeks, on SoundCloud and iTunes, is coming back on September 1st.
Oh.
Yep.
30 days before Luke Cage hits the internet.
It's true. That's true.
Very the Netflix
that's completely that is planned. Correct. Obviously planned. Obviously planned.
That was Alan Kissler, everybody. He farted. I'm just kidding. That was me. All right, let's jump into the news. Spider-Man Homecoming. There's no news. I just wanted to say Spider-Man Homecoming. Oh, I'm excited about it.
That's a thing that's happening.
We also do have some pics of his web shooters that Atlanta, like the Atlanta filming Twitter posted. Can we get those up, Doom? Can we get those up? No.
There they are.
Let's go to the. There's another one where he's like,
oh,
got
those
it. Like,
are so cool. I like how look, they're outside
you,
of his costume.
No, they're outside, and if you look like on his right hand, you can kind of see just a little bit. You
the
can
palm
see
trigger.
The palm
yeah.
trigger. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm totally cool with them being external. I know that's like against the norm, but I like.
No, but I love it. I think it's so cool. Yeah, I actually kind of do too. Yeah.
It'd make more sense to be like, oh no, I need to recharge. I put another web cartridge in. Let me take off my gloves and pull up my suit and fix it.
Yeah, as he's falling, like, oh, I'm out of web fluid.
Yeah, like it's logically more like, oh, click, 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 like, and plus it's got a Ben Reilly flavor, and I am one of the few apologists of Ben Reilly. So
Ben Reilly was a good character. The stories did not serve him well.
Right.
The plan did not work.
But he's, I mean, Scarlet Spider was awesome. His suit's great. This reminds me of the ankle and the cartridges
sure,
and stuff.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, I also like how it goes with his gear. I mean, that totally fits.
Yeah.
Well, it's basically like bracers, but
But it also has kind of like just a bit of a web-like sort of shape to it. Like, so it also like fits the aesthetic. Like, I'm excited. Yeah. Like,
I've always been more of an external than an internal because it's like. You know, he runs out of web fluid. Oh, I got to go eat a hamburger real quick.
Yeah.
You
know,
I got to generate some more.
Yeah, no, organic.
I mean, also symbolically, the web shooters really work for me because right there, like one of the great things about Spider-Man, Peter Parker in the initial thing is like, he's actually a special person before he becomes Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. He's a genius. He's a wunderkind.
Mm-hmm.
And he's this genius who is capable of making web fluid and it's sort of emblematic of how we often treat high school, that there's this special brilliant kid there, and the kids around him don't pay attention to him, don't give him respect. It's not until he does something that's almost akin to sports, where he puts on a colorful outfit and does physical things, and then people are like, oh yeah, this guy's amazing.
Yeah, but he was amazing the whole time.
But he was amazing the whole time, and the web shooters are emblematic of that. They're emblematic, and they're also, especially in those early Stan Lee, Steve Ditko stories, he's constantly solving things through his intelligence and through science.
Mm-hmm.
And to have his main feature outside of crawling walls be something of science that he made. I'm like, that's completely symbolic.
Well, yeah. And like what we saw at the at Hall H when they showed the Spider-Man footage, like it was so fun to see him like trying to like make web fluid in chemistry class. Like that's, you wouldn't have that if it, like it was a biological thing, you know?
And actually, Peter David, he and Stan Lee did a retelling of Spider-Man's origin for a book, an anthology in the mid-90s called Ultimate Spider-Man Collection, before Ultimate Spider-Man became a comic book. And in their retelling, it talked about how Peter had made the web shooting, the web fluid, a couple of years before, and had hoped to patent it as a super glue, but he couldn't fix this flaw, where after an hour, it always dissolved into dust. And so he had just, like, put the notes away, and it's like, one day I'll fix it, damn. But then when he became Spider-Man, it's like, oh my god, I don't have to worry about cleanup, because it turns into dust an hour later. It's not a flaw, it's perfect. It's great. Oh,
that's awesome.
And so, like, I just love that as well, because that's also how science often works. Like, some you're trying to make one thing, you mm-hmm. find something else. You know, mm-hmm. you accidentally make champagne.
I also love how they handled it in the movie in nice. Civil War, where Iron Man respected the science of it. And then, yeah. like, I was just so afraid they'd have Tony Stark invent the web fluid, because I was terrified of that.
That would have killed me.
It would have broken Spider-Man.
That would have killed me.
Instead having Tony Stark be like, I'm brilliant, you're also brilliant, let's be science bros, and then like having him maybe help with the web shooters works for me, and the design of them have his Stark work with, but having Peter invent the science of it is perfect for me.
And well, also, like, Spider-Man, like, when Stan Lee, when in the 50s, you had the Comic Code come in 1954, and part of the idea was that there were lots of people, parent groups, and some people in the government who were thinking, like, comic books are just damaging to kids.
Right,
so we need to have positive influences, and if superheroes are going to come back, they need to have they need to be a more positive influence, otherwise they just seem to be anarchists.
Right.
And DC responded by making their superheroes for a while, like, a lot of them were cops. So Green Lantern was now not a dude with the magic ring, he was a space cop. Mm-hmm. And Hawkman was now of the Hawkman police force on Thanagar. And Martian Manhunter was a cop on Mars and was now a detective. Flash was a CSI. And Stan Lee went a different route with Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby and the rest, where everyone, almost everyone in his universe, were learned people of either science or medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You had, like, Peter Parker, Reed Richards, Scott Lang, Doctor Strange was a surgeon, you know, Dr. Banner, like, they're all... Don Blake, physician, is also Thor. And it was this whole thing of, like, embracing, dude, people who know science and medicine change the world. Mm-hmm. And so I love whenever we can get that, how many Marvel heroes are just geeks.
Yeah.
If we can get them to tech talk... I love it.
I
could talk about this for an hour, and I want to, but we are 10 minutes in, and we've talked about Spider-Man web shooters. So
you know what?
We've got to move on.
That means we're doing it right, Maggie.
Look, we have... I just know
this
what we
is
still
how it
coming.
Goes.
Let's talk about Doctor Strange. I know it's coming.
There's nothing to talk about, and it breaks me that there isn't.
Captain Marvel, though, while we're looking at pictures, Brie Larson tweeted a picture saying something like Larson Industries research. She's wearing a Captain Marvel sweatshirt. I think you can buy that on We Love Fine. I think it was designed by Katie Elhoffer, who we've had on our show.
Nice.
Sweet.
And she's reading Captain Marvel Volume 1, it looks like, by Kelly Sue DeConnick. So it's just exciting to see her. Like, it's just cool to see.
No, it's
like,
awesome.
It's whenever it's
John,
fun.
Like, when John Bernthal was doing his Punisher research, and you would see him, like, in the comic book shop buying Punisher, she's like, oh,
like,
you're doing it!
She's fully wearing it and everything, too. Like, that just makes me so happy.
I think this might be even something, like, a unique piece of clothing, because if you look closely, it has a collar, which the sweater doesn't have.
Oh. Maybe I'm incorrect. Maybe have a sweater. I think it's so cool that she's just, like, geeking out.
Release it to us, Marvel!
Give us a Brie Larson as Captain Marvel. Also a sweatshirt.
I love it when actors actually, you know, go like full deep in into the research. Like, you know, Mike Coulter has gone like
it's almost
full
like
deep
you should have comics on set and have your actors read them instead of other studios that might not.
Christopher Reeve became like the biggest Superman expert. And when they had him, like, when they had him on Smallville, he would talk to like Tom Welling about all these things that happened to Superman over the years and stuff. Like he became such
that's
a
incredible.
Fan
I didn't know that.
Yeah, huge Superman.
That's
so
awesome.
Fun. Huge.
Great.
Knew all the trivia. Yeah. Could tell the writers.
What's
and
all
the
about Garfield? Like Garfield when he went to Comic-Con as Spider-Man, the fan. And then
I thought you
Spider-Man,
meant Garfield
the
cat.
Man.
I was like,
hates Mondays, loves Spider-Man.
Hates
Mondays.
He decided Grumpy Cat was stealing the
loves
spotlight.
Loves lasagna and webbing.
When Bill Murray was behind the mic doing the voiceover,
really
he had every single Jim Davis comic there. It was
really into it.
Really into it. He loved that movie. Let's talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Marvel Television real quick. We got our first synopsis for season 4. Doom, do you want to take this and run with it, or should I throw it down?
Oh man, I'm so excited.
I knew you would be. That's why I'm giving you the chance to talk.
Doom is excited.
Doom loves ABC.
Doom would love ABC.
Let's talk about what Doom would binge watch. Let's do that. Let's figure this out.
Let's do that up
big
the air.
That's the red guy, Doom.
Doom, talk to us about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It came out like right after we finished last week, which of course.
Of course.
But it sounds really cool. I mean, basically it's a larger scale reaction to the fallout from the Sokovia Accords,
yeah,
even than we saw last season. And we got some more information on Jason O'Mara's director, that he is going to be not somebody from within or who's been around S.H.I.E.L.D., but because S.H.I.E.L.D. is now going to be public as part of the enforcement for the Sokovia Accords, he is now instituted by outside forces to take over S.H.I.E.L.D., since Coulson, since he's dead, cannot be the public face of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So in some ways, I mean, like, that doesn't mean that it's not going to be Director Coulson anymore. He's still probably going to be a high-level agent, probably doing a lot of directing behind the scenes. He's just not the public face of it. So
high-level, definitely, but he was in that little snippet we got of the flash-forward. He was a field agent, seemingly.
Absolutely.
He behaved like he was demoted.
But what's funny, like, to think about, like, he's a field agent, but he's not the public face. Like, why are they even allowing him in the field if that's, like, a concern?
Yeah, he should just have a dark office.
Yeah, he should have, like, a dark office desk job. But it does sound like they're going to be hunting down the Inhumans. If we're going to get the royal family at all, that's where they're going to come in. The world believes that Daisy is... Here's one of the sentences that got me. The world believes Daisy is a dangerous outlaw who has taken down banks and bridges, and the new director has no qualms about taking her down for good. So, like, O'Mara is just like, nah, let's kill her. So, like, that's got to be a point of contention for the rest of the team.
Elizabeth Hentritz, Simmons is going to be on his side.
Oh, yeah. Potentially. Yeah, she's kind of, like, turning against the team in a way.
Yeah, so, I mean, with the darker time slot, it sounds like everybody's going to be fighting against each other.
Yeah. So, anyway, let's. I'm ready to move on, Doom, unless you have some other things that you want to say.
I mean, just with the... They did do a little bit more of, like, the hinting at Ghost Rider's story and how they're going to encounter him, and they're not sure if he's going to be a good guy or bad guy at first.
Oh, yeah, the sentence is, Robbie Reyes will roar into the lives of Agent Coulson and the team as a junkyard mechanic who can turn on a dime into the terrifying Ghost Rider. So, will he be friend or foe to S.H.I.E.L.D.? He'll start off as foe and then become friend.
Ghost Rider should always be both.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's an actual anti-hero. Like, he's like, well, all the Midnight Suns, in my opinion, are true anti-heroes. They're not fully either one direction.
Which is why the Duffer Brothers should take
that show.
Oh my god. Duffer Brothers, take that show, please.
Well, it's like when I always loved, because I grew up on Johnny Blaze, and I always loved that he would turn into Ghost Rider, but it was like he would see a bad situation, like, okay, I'll let Ghost Rider loose. But then would always be like, I hope I can put him back in the cage after he beats up those guys, because if someone else gets in his way, he might kill them.
He might just kill them, too.
It was just like this intelligent, malevolent Hulk that you would let out.
Oh, you know, that's a good...
And I really like Ghost Rider's the
parallel,
gun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, I like it.
Just has a different set of morals in him, but...
Yeah, he's a freaking demon!
Not to speak too positively about the Ghost Rider Nick Cage film, but I enjoyed that Nick Cage always seemed like he was, like... It was like a drug. Like, it seemed like something that he got off on, but he was also worried about the side effects of.
That's every Nick Cage movie.
Well, yeah, that's just Nick Cage. No, but I think that's a fun way to play with it. Having to be, like, you know, a thing that gives you power, but you're also weary about the side effects of.
I don't understand how we have screwed up doing a badass, kick-ass Ghost Rider film twice.
Because
the first time I was so distracted by Nick Cage doing, very obviously, his Elvis impression.
And his 20-year-old body, CGI.
Yeah. And I'm like, I was watching him, like, why is he talking like this? He's impersonating Elvis because the bike leathers were inspired by Elvis. Oh God, I hate you. And then the second movie was written by David Goyer.
That's so enough. F it. That's enough yeah, knowledge.
No, that's just screenwriter of BVS and Man of Steel. So
all right. So
sorry, I derailed that, Matt.
No, it's okay, Doom. It's okay.
I think they're gonna introduce. They said they're gonna introduce Ghost Rider right up top. So
yeah, he's in the pilot. Yeah.
Magic is gonna really drive it early. So I'm hoping that that means we're gonna have Doctor Strange crossover when we get there.
I don't think that Benedict Cumberbatch is going to be in.
Not Doctor Strange himself, a crossover with the film.
Yeah, no, I think that there will definitely be something going on. They always try to do something.
It'd be great if Benedict Cumberbatch showed up just as a medical consultant, like, oh yeah, you know, you should take some aspirin for that, and then just walks out.
And then just, like, walked away and his hands were shaking the whole time.
Wow, that Doctor Strange is a really nice guy. I hope things work out for him later.
And then the entire cast turns...
That doctor was strange.
Yeah.
It's like, when did the whole cast, like, winks at camera, like, they all turn, like,
All right, several TV shows are in consideration at ABC. Several Marvel TV shows, I should throw out. Yeah.
Yes.
At the Television Critics Association, ABC Network President Channing Dungey, which is a interesting. Is it Dungey or Dungey? I feel bad for her either way, because like neither pronunciation is flattering. But she says, since I've been in the role, which is just this year, since I've been in this role, we've been in a number of really terrific conversations with the Marvel team. We're actually sitting down in 2 weeks to discuss our next steps. That would be like this week. And looking at a number of different things. Some of them are projects that we were working on before, and some of them are totally new ideas and IPs. The two that we know about that were out there were Damage Control, which we don't know what's going on with it now due to like DC's Powerless show. So like that, maybe that's like kind of like, oh, we don't want to have the exact same show, even though to, you know, Damage Control came out before DC had anything like that. But right. Am I right, Alan?
It's whoever gets fact it check first me? Though, you know,
whoever gets it out on TV first, but Damage Control, like the idea of a team like cleaning up after superheroes was first done with Damage Control, right?
It was DC first done to such a degree, yeah. I mean, you occasionally had remarks about, you know, it's going to take forever for local forces to clean this up. Or,
yeah.
You know, infrastructure is screwed and da-da-da-da. But, yeah, Dwayne McDuffie
did Damage Control
as almost a satire of, look, someone's got to pick up the Sentinel after it's knocked out. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, someone's got to do this. And that was... that was part of the 80s because we were deconstructing everything about superheroes. Like 70s was about exploring social issues, and then 80s was about, well, who does their laundry and stuff like that. And so it just fit in with...
It was about deconstructing how ridiculous superheroes really are. Like, if you look at them and explore it, it's ridiculous.
And it worked so well for the Marvel Universe, which always tried to have that idea of it's your universe, this is outside your window.
Yeah.
It just happens to have Marvel heroes in it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it even got referenced a couple more times about what the effects of that were. Like, in his first issue of Daredevil, Kevin Smith brought up the idea that New York and certain other cities actually, because of lawyers like Daredevil arguing for it, have this multi-billion dollar insurance plan that operates for superhero damage.
Oh my god,
that's so awesome. Lasted a while, that concept,
yeah,
of million
yeah.
dollar insurance policies. I love that idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah. That's a great idea. So there's also, there's Damage Control, but then there's also the show that John Ridley's been working on for about a year now that no one knows anything about, and all of us want it to be Ms. Marvel.
We literally know nothing else?
We know nothing except that John Ridley is working on a TV show.
Okay.
It holds up just because of the show he just did. Was it American Crime?
American Crime, yeah, I think.
Yeah, because it dealt with a lot of Muslim stories in America.
A lot of people have said, oh my god, are you working on Ms. Marvel? And they've all gone on record saying, no, it's not Ms. Marvel, but come on, it's Ms. Marvel.
Okay, but we could speculate. For
we all want it to be Ms. Marvel, so it is. Because that's how the secret works.
Or could it be Shamrock?
No.
Shamrock?
Remember her?
Yeah.
This is like, no. She's just like this dumb Irish character. Like, I want her to be cool because I'm Irish. But
one day we'll get a good Irish character in the film.
They later had this idea where like, she was originally just, she was good, she had good luck, and she dressed in a costume with a shamrock on it.
Okay.
And then they're like, oh, well, she can also summon the dead spirits of
the
unavenged. I'm like, that's much better.
But real racist. It's like the anti-black cat with racial stereotypes.
It's just,
Well,
go ahead.
No, I would like, since, you know, with like Netflix, we have Luke Cage and everything. I want Misty Knight. I want
Daughters of the Dragon.
Or call it Heroes for Hire. Or call it that. And,
oh my
you know,
God.
Depending because on where you want to go into the
ABC show, that would be so
wouldn't
good.
Because
you can bring in like White Tiger through them, and you can explore all the other like parts of the Marvel Universe that are more about everyday problems and aren't about cosmic threats and frankly don't have just white people.
I still want She-Hulk and a procedural, man. I still want like an Aaron Sorkin written She-Hulk lawyer show.
See, that's
I
think ABC is I think She-Hulk on ABC
is the perfect home.
It's the tone-wise of that show is perfect ABC.
Procedurals is great for that like kind of network, and then the only superhero show that would actually work as a procedural with that budget is She-Hulk. Like, I think it'd be great.
I just hope that if they do a She-Hulk procedural or like attorney show, like that they still keep like that lonely man like bum 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 bum.
She just walks away at the end of
the end of every single trial.
Like, bum, bum, it's like bum, bum, when she loses one.
Yeah.
Bum, 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 bum.
Nice.
Of course,
there
of course
it is.
Doom has it ready with it. Oh, She-Hulk.
Lost the case.
Also, let's talk about Marvel's Most Wanted. She said, Marvel's Most Wanted, at the end of the day, did not feel as strong as some of the other pilots that we shot. We talked about it with Marvel, and we all came to an agreement that we wanted to figure out what the next show we do together, and we all feel as creatively strong as it can be. So, they just didn't feel like it worked. It's okay.
That's fine. There's a lot of other material to choose from.
There's so much other material. All right.
And I'd rather it not work beforehand than not work out. I'd rather it not be out there and be like, ooh, and weaken the brand. So I'd rather they learn in pre-production. Exactly.
And I'm just saying, a crime drama with Misty and Colleen Wing.
Oh, my God. So good. So good.
It's fantastic.
That's a great idea.
They just really need to do that.
What do you guys think of because they've been putting Night Nurse...
of a hospital show?
They've been putting Night Nurses in Doctor Strange and on Netflix. Like, I don't know if they could get Rosario Dawson onto ABC, but a Night Nurse procedural show for ABC could be a very interesting.
Well, like every episode, some hero or villain is injured, and therefore Night Nurse must help them.
Yeah,
it's like secretly, like really high budget stakes.
If damage control is out the window, just because of Powerless, it could be a way to get like a more lighter tone, almost comedy. That's like right near the superhero world, about the people that react to it.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, Rosario Dawson would be so tired. Poor Claire Temple.
Oh, I know. Claire goes through so much.
Claire.
She tries so hard, guys. No, I mean, I there's so much to explore in this world also. I mean, one thing another shame about Fantastic Four not being under Marvel Studios is that I would love to see, not as a full show maybe, but as a miniseries. It was established in the comics eventually that Nathaniel Richards, Reed's father, and Howard Stark worked together in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Just like, it would be fun to see a miniseries.
Like a 1960s.
Agent Carter now being Director Carter and being their boss.
And then you've also got, like, Hank Pym coming in, like...
Sure.
I mean, you may not be able to get, like, Michael Douglas to do TV,
You can also maybe have the Wasp do something beyond die in a flashback. Like, it just... You have so much you can explore with the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. No, that would be a lot of fun. Let's move away from ABC. Let's skibbity-bop, scooby-dee-boo over to Fox, where Simon Kinberg was talking at the TCAs. He's got some new show out. I can't remember the name of it. But everyone wanted to talk to him about the Fox universe, which I thought was funny. So he said, I think Deadpool 2 will comment on anything that's happening in the movies today, especially in superhero movies. The sort of glut or saturation of these movies and the proliferation of sequels is definitely something we'll play around with. So,
they're
going to
have a lot of fun.
I'm already excited about the script that doesn't exist yet.
Look at Coy. I just
want it so bad. Yes. Like, the fact that that's like a commentary before it's even been written means we're going to... Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you. Thank you, world.
Yeah. In the glut and saturation, I think is kind of funny, too.
I never thought I'd get Deadpool. I never thought after 11 years of fighting, I'd get Deadpool. I didn't think I'd love it. And then I didn't think a sequel would happen. It broke every record. The sequel sounds amazing. It hasn't been written yet, and it exists.
Well, speaking of the scene, and we all kind of guessed that was going to come, but like, because he breaks the fourth wall, it's what he does, but like, just hearing like one of the writers and producers
about
to
say Deadpool into a mic and walk away, and I'd be like, that's the greatest news! Yes! That's all I need.
What if they walked up and said, Headpool?
Yes!
Greatest news! That rhymes with Deadpool!
Biting his arm, yes!
Kedpool. I love those shoes! Keds are great! Speaking of
they'd
Deadpool,
sell. They'd sell it. I'd buy them. Where do I get them?
Kedpool.
DSW? I'm going.
Sure, let's go. Let's go right now.
Stilt Man.
Kedpool!
He doesn't even hear it anymore.
No. Lady Stilt Man.
Yeah! Deadpool!
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answer?
Pace by Pete. All right, I added to it. Now we're moving on. Deadpool 2 also will have Cable, and he said, "I've seen rumors about everybody from Arnold Schwarzenegger to I can't even remember. Truth is, we haven't cast him." So
Keira Knightley, right?
Oh my god!
I would watch the hell out of that.
Lady Cable. Oh,
I would
be awesome.
Fine with that. Would be fine if Cable just showed up like, Cable, you're a lady. Like, dude, all the time traveling. Timeline's changed. I've adjusted. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Okay, that would be all I needed. Yeah. Like, sure.
You know who'd be
sure.
a great lady?
Go for it.
Cable, Emily Blunt, since she's not Captain Marvel. Emily Blunt as Cable.
That Edge of Tomorrow,
right?
Though.
Exactly. Oh, man. Like, Edge of Tomorrow is
so surprisingly good.
She was really good.
At no, I'm you know hard now. Right? Not, I'm you so not kidding.
Emily Blunt for Cable.
You know who else would be good? Cable is Brienne of Tarth.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's her name?
I'm blanking on the actress's name. About. Yeah.
Yeah, but she's.
It hurts awesome. My heart that I can't remember her name, but. Who was also Captain Phasma?
She's got that depth, that intensity, mm-hmm. but that vulnerability.
Gwendolyn Christie.
And she's also just like she's got like that sort of imposing stature that Cable has. Like,
yeah, it's true. She's like built for it. Yeah. I mean, I still want Mel Gibson, and I still want Keira Knightley as Domino, but I can dream.
Oh my God! Yeah. So he also explained the Gambit delays, and whether this is a smokescreen or not, who knows? I hope that it's not though, because maybe Fox is starting to learn their lesson of. Pushing things in like into being a film before they're fully developed. Because here's what I think Marvel does well that Fox and DC could really learn from. Captain Marvel, the film that is coming out in 2018, they've been writing that movie for 3 years now.
Right.
That was in pre-development before they ever, like, they were playing around with the script and the ideas and previs for it before they even brought in a screenwriter. Then they brought in screenwriters to write it. They've had screenwriters on it for a year now. They still don't have a director for it. Then the director will do a pass. Like, before you get to Captain Marvel, they will have had it in development for 5 to 6 years. And they can afford to do that because they started the game and everything else for the cinematic universe. Everyone else is playing catch-up now. And they're being impatient. And they don't need to be. Because, like, if Gambit comes out in 2018 and it's a good movie, that's better than, like, rushing it out. And you know, that's better than, like, saying Suicide Squad is going to hit in 2016, so...
Here's six weeks, David Ayer,
you know? Mm-hmm. Like, for what time he had, like, Suicide Squad should have been far worse than it actually was.
Can you imagine writing any feature in 6 weeks? Much less one with that many characters, like, with that many stakes,
that much history. Universe.
It would take me at least eight.
Minimum. My goodness. Weekends off, of course, for a summary.
I mean, I am Alan Kissel.
Let's be serious here.
But 6 weeks? Yeah. We're not machines. 6 weeks ago? Like, that's incredible. Yeah. It's incredible that he was able to pull off
that film.
So the fact that this is getting delayed, I'm okay with, because Gambit's not 12 years old. Channing Tatum can age a little. Like, it's not like there's a restriction on the way the movie's set up so far that has a time limit.
So hopefully Fox is learning that, and it seems like maybe they are, because he says, I think the truth when you have these movies that need very special and unique tone, it takes a little while to find that tone. Deadpool feels like it exploded out of nowhere, but it was a 10-year development process on that movie. I think it was honed over those 10 years. I hope that Gambit doesn't take 10 years, but it takes a little honing to get that tone and that voice exactly right. The character has such a specific voice in the comic, in the same way that Deadpool has a specific voice, that we want to make sure that we capture that voice on the page. Really, it's just about getting a screenplay that is worthy of that character, and I think we're really close right now.
A friend of mine, Rebecca Theodore, you see her on Twitter maybe as a Film Fatale, and she's written a lot of stuff for Forbes. She brought up this weekend, we know it's not happening because Channing Tatum is Gambit, but she just brought up her own thought this weekend of, like, if you were going to recast it, she wanted Daveed Diggs from Hamilton. And now that I have that in my head, I'm just like, I am actually all freaking for that.
I'm not familiar.
He plays Thomas Jefferson. Okay. He's mixed. He's got this magnificent, like, wavy afro, and he's just got, like, sass and attitude and charm, like, all over him. As Thomas Jefferson, he comes out in this freaking, like, purple long coat and a cane and just owns the stage. Mm-hmm. He's also an incredible... hip-hop artist and rapper. Like, he does songs where he does, I think they count, like, 21 words a second.
Whoa.
Like, that's his kind of cat. Like, he's an awesome cat, and I, like, I know it would never happen, but I loved Hamilton, I loved Daveed, and now I'm just like, I would be so for that. I just pulled up a picture of him,
and yeah. No, I can... I'm on board. Yeah,
I'd be so for it.
I like Norman Reedus as Gambit, is what I was talking about, if not Channing Tatum.
I could see that.
Like, Norman Reedus is, like, his grimy, dirty charm, because he's, like, so somehow weirdly sexy in a very...
That's the thing to me. That's
Gambit has this nest that isn't typically handsome.
No, and that was actually why my main objection to Channing Tatum, I was just like, no, I don't like Gambit necessarily being pretty. I like that there's got to be... I mean, he's charming.
He's being attractive in a different way.
But he's roguish, exactly. Yeah. Roguish. Roguish is a thing, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I love him as... since we have Channing Tatum and since he's so involved...
No, he's good.
I'm excited. He's not the problem, C-Tate's.
Yeah, absolutely not. No, 22 Jump Street, genius.
Genius.
No, that movie, I did not expect it to be as funny and as good as it was.
How did 21 Jump Street happen? Like, I
how did 21 Jump... How was 21 Jump Street good?
Amazing.
But it was good.
It was so good.
I was so impressed.
Let's move on. One last thing that Simon Kinberg talked about at the I almost said the CMA is like the Country Music Awards.
What?
You know, Simon Kinberg, when he won his Country Music Award at the television TCAs, he said he talked about Legion and working with Noah Hawley on it. And his quote is, actually, Legion came out of a conversation that Noah and I had when I was in Moscow for the release of Days of Future Past. Noah was somebody I really admired, and we were talking about doing X-Men TV shows. We had a bunch of different ideas. Legion wasn't one of them, but Noah said to me, I want to do Breaking Bad in the superhero world. I want to actually tell the story about the origin of essentially a villain. And then Legion evolved from there, and it became the show that it is. So Legion is going to be like the superhero equivalent to Breaking Bad. Alan, I see that you're not impressed by that and that you don't like it.
I'm just... I mean, if you want to go that way, that's cool. I mean, look, I hope all of this stuff does well, because I love when other people get excited about superhero stuff.
Sure.
Even if it's a different version than what I like, and that's fine. But it's just, I mean, just the fact that you even picked Legion, it's such a weird character to pick to me. Like, the most interesting thing about him usually is that he's Xavier's son.
Have you read X-Men Legacy?
Yeah, and they used there have been different times where like he's been used well, but I feel like those are so few and far between.
But if
they
base this off that, then it's gold.
That would be cool. But this doesn't sound like
that. It doesn't sound like
that. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, Legion is also something you can get really bad and frankly insulting really quickly because
of the personality.
Because he's got mental health issues, mm-hmm. And he's got dissociative identity disorder. Sometimes it's schizophrenia. Like, people have written him without doing even, like, the most basic research on what those mental health issues are. And I just feel like when we have Wikipedia, when we have all these things at our fingertips, we can do a little bit of research. Like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Breaking Bad did research just to get the idea of what goes into making meth right. You know, if you want to do Breaking Bad, then I would love to see the same kind of research and care.
Yes, I agree. We should just have Mr. Sinister and put Bryan Cranston in there.
Oh,
and let's just
see,
do that.
Already, more interesting. If you make a period piece, Victorian Mr. Essex, like, becoming thing, and then we follow him through timelines, like, every season is later in history.
And there you go.
Wow.
Then it's made.
You're
make
welcome.
That. Make that. Done deal.
All right, so that's on ABC. Let me... I think, you guys, it's time for us to talk Netflix and Defenders and Misty Knight and Luke Cage.
Who are they?
Well, I'm going to let Coy handle it, because I've never heard of them.
Oh, these Defenders you speak of?
Yes.
So, first up, let's just say very quickly, Rachel Taylor may be in Defenders. We don't know. But she posted on, I believe, Instagram saying, vacation is over, work in the bag is my least favorite thing with my training, which is why I got to do it. And it's a video of her like working out with a punching bag. We know Defenders is shooting later this year, so it's possible that she's like very subtly saying, I might be in Defenders. We don't know if she's going to be Hellcat or if she's just going to be in an episode or two as Jessica Jones' friend, but it's exciting to think that Hellcat might actually be part of the Defenders.
I want it.
He wants it.
All right. So
done. It's done then.
We also got a new Luke Cage poster.
Do we have that?
Yeah, we have it. Like, that's not it. That's Brie Larson. That's nowhere. There we go.
They can't see that.
Oh, they can't see that. Okay. They can see that, though, right?
Now they can
see it. Okay.
The man who inspired Nicolas Cage's stage name.
Yep.
Not a joke.
I love that his son is decent. His son is amalgam, effectively.
Because when Nicolas Coppola looked at Luke Cage, he thought, you know what? I relate to a black man with unbreakable skin who was once accused of a crime he didn't commit and became a hero for hire.
I will take that name.
And then he named his son Kal-El, which makes his son the Amalgam Universe.
Kal-El.
Effectively.
Yeah.
Remember like, the 90s? That's his son.
I immediately felt bad for that kid because I was imagining the school bully who would be beating him up and claiming his fist had kryptonite or something in it. Like, it just sets you up so badly.
I love in your world the bully's a nerd, too.
Yeah, the bully knows.
The bully definitely knows what kryptonite is. My brother went out with a girl one time who didn't know what I meant by saying, oh, it's my kryptonite. She'd never, as far as she knew, never heard the word kryptonite. And I was just like, I'm so disappointed in everyone right now.
What I find funny about Nick Cage taking that name for himself is that Luke Cage is actually not Luke Cage's real name.
Right, he's Carl Lucas.
It's Carl Lucas.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of funny. Nick Cage chose a fake name.
Right. It's sort of like he's saying, you know, Clark Kent is my favorite hero, therefore I will have my stage name be Nicholas Superman. Like, it's like, wait, that's not literally his name, Nicholas Superman.
Or it's like saying I was inspired by the works of Samuel Clemens. I therefore changed my name to Mark Twain. Like,
Or
it's a pseudonym.
Nicholas Mark Twain.
Nicholas Christmas. Twain. All right, sweet Christmas indeed. All right. Let's also briefly talk about the fact that Jeff Loeb, I think it was at Comic-Con, said, we're very lucky in a sense that, let me see, do I even want to read that one? No. He said, I think Netflix is being very, talking about a possible Misty Knight spinoff. He said, yes. I think Netflix is being very selective in terms of where we're going. That being said, Simone Missick, who plays Misty Knight, knocked it so far out of the park that we're still trying to find the baseball. It's somewhere out there traversing the globe, so it's really great. And I can tell you that what she's doing on Luke Cage is just incredible. The fans are really going to love it. So, but it sounds like maybe they've gone to, I mean, maybe I'm reading into it, but it sounds like maybe they've gone to Netflix and said, hey, so this character, right? I mean, we got Punisher.
Right.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. I mean, huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
Then plus we have her and Colleen Wing get
Colleen
together.
Colleen Wing, yeah.
You can kind of have, I don't know, if you want the flavor of a Xena and Gabriel.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Gabriel,
that's so awesome.
But like in New York as detectives, and then there's
Daughters of the Dragon
involved. And just thinking of like when Misty would get, you know, the arm.
The Tony Stark made arm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which eventually could, you know, melt everything, including adamantium.
Would...
But, you know, mm-hmm. that's far in the future. But you know that that's coming. You know, like her and Iron Fist.
Iron Fist, yeah.
Her and Iron Fist getting together. And it's just like, even that romance happening. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh.
Love it.
Need to do this already.
As long as at some point they get to fight the Hypno Hustler. Because that was a villain.
Hypno Hustler.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well,
he was right up there with Big Wheel.
He's back lately. They've used him in a couple of comics. He was in like six months ago. I was like, Hypno Hustler?
No, my boy Dan brought him back.
Yeah,
along with the Living Brain.
Yep.
Oh, Dan, what are you doing? All right. Let's get into the nitty gritty of the trailer that you guys watched it for the first time. I watched it this morning because I wanted to pull stills from it and everything for the show. But let's talk about it. What did you guys... Like, what stood out?
Luke Cage, for me.
Okay,
he stood
good.
Out.
Let's move on,
He
guys.
Did great.
Great conversation. Good work.
Well done. Well done.
I liked that it was gritty, but that it wasn't gritty like The Wire gritty.
Yeah.
You know, I like that it didn't go that far with it, from what I can tell with the trailer. I mean, it kind of had that daredevilness and kind of like the... I like the flair with it, like when you see the singers and they're singing, and it's just it has like that 70s vibe that Alan was talking about before, but it's not offensive.
Yeah,
right. And isn't it wonderful about, like, look, we could do it. We could tell this story without being offensive.
Yeah, it's
like, oh, guys, come on. It's actually maybe not that hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like that the story is about him. I mean, it is his story, just like with Jessica Jones, it was about her. It is her story.
Yeah.
It's not some other person being, like, which happens when you have minority characters, some other person actually being the main focus or actually being the new eyes into the world, where you don't need new eyes into the world because you have Luke Cage being his own new eyes into this world.
Mm-hmm.
I call that, like, sort of the glory test. Where, like, if you remember the movie Glory, you know, it's supposed to be about black soldiers in the American Civil War, but it really becomes about poor Matthew Broderick recognizing all this terrible stuff in the Civil War. Like, but it was too much.
That's still, like, the white man. Like,
right, exactly.
Doing,
and likewise, so some of you might know about the Bechdel test, but do you know about the Johnson test? So the Johnson...
That sounds...
It's not, no. Okay. So the Johnson test was proposed by a writer.
I'm sure Luke Cage would pass if that's where we're going with this.
No.
So, he would pass with flying colors.
So the Bechdel test, for those of you who don't know, is just... It brought up by Alison Bechdel of A Fun Home and various other things. And in her comic strip, she had two women characters talk about that they don't see movies now unless it passes their test. And mm-hmm. it became known as the Bechdel test. And that was, the movie has to have two women characters who have a name.
Mm-hmm.
They have to know each other and talk at one point about something that is not a man. And people take that to mean, like, also, like, you know, they can talk about their son or family, maybe, but they can't talk about, like, the boy they're both going after or the man in their lives or whatever. And a writer later came up with the Johnson test of to just to give you, mm-hmm. let a movie see if it passes it. And that's that you have at least two black characters, or not necessarily black, but two non-white characters that have names, and at one point... At least if these two white characters, or hopefully you have more, but at least two of them have a conversation that is not about a white character mm-hmm. in the story. And if you consider a conversation to be longer than 20 seconds, then the movie The Help does not pass the Johnson test.
Wow.
Wow, really?
I mean, actually, think about that movie.
Yeah.
Think about that movie.
Because so much of that movie was about Emma Stone's bravery.
Yes, of writing other people's stories.
Right, exactly. So. Yeah. And that's something just to consider, you know, like, not that all movies have to be end-all, be-all of the Bechdel and Johnson test, but just consider how many movies can't pass either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how many TV shows can't pass either. And it's just something to keep in mind. And you know, I think about those when I see a trailer like Luke Cage, and it's like, this is a story.
Yeah.
This is a true story. This isn't, you know, Matt Murdock isn't there to tell the story of Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, this is Luke's story, just like you said, and I think that's fantastic. And you've got such a variety of characters already just from the trailer. Everyone seems to have different dimensions to them, just on what little we've seen. You've got Claire coming in, so that's mm-hmm. a familiar touchstone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very excited for this.
The things that worked for me were the, it actually had, and I think Netflix has done this better than a lot of movies, it had screenshots that looked like comic frames over mm-hmm. and over again, but they mm-hmm. felt like they were in-universe. Like, mm-hmm. Netflix has built such a rich universe, like you were saying, it felt like Daredevil, felt like Jessica Jones, but right. also, taking a step back, like that shot of Cottonmouth in front of the Biggie poster, that is like,
yeah.
beautifully.
Yeah. Well,
I can picture,
him...
like, an Alex Maleev art piece yeah. with that drawing. Like, this when one... I see that, yeah, when I see that, I picture, like,
nice.
Certain artwork, and I see it in both comic and film, and then, like, the use of yellow, yeah. colors, mm-hmm. the, I mean, Claire Temple's opening moment, like there's so much that felt like a comic, and then of course since it's Netflix, the hallway, like yeah. like the fact that it was a hallway, I was like, we're in Netflix again.
Did we lose the stream as I was talking about racial tolerance? Is that really what happened?
did we? That's kind of funny.
I think,
oh, I should go to the stream and take a look.
I'm never on the stream because I'm looking at Twitter and the rundown. Yep,
apparently,
yeah,
I mean, thank
points.
Goodness people were complaining. It was just really getting interesting. Like at least no one's like, thank God someone shut that.
They killed him.
Yeah, Popcorn Talk was like, oh, Kissler's talking about race. Oh, pull the plug.
Okay, apparently we're back.
Fix, guys, it should be up momentarily.
Yeah,
could they still hear us? Or are we in the dark?
I mean, we're gonna live on. We're on YouTube. Like, I mean, it's. We're not lost forever. They just can't
Fair.
See us
oh,
live
good.
Right now.
Fair.
Yeah, we haven't dissipated into nothingness.
I'm lost
Coy.
Forever, Matt.
Coy, like, no, you're not. You're with me.
Lost forever.
So let's talk about Cottonmouth. What did you guys think?
I mean, it's perfect. Yeah. Like, there's nothing to, like, it's just good. Like,
yeah.
I've been excited. As soon as they
great.
Cast this guy, I was like, it's going to
so
be great.
Mahershala yeah. Ali,
smooth.
Right?
Love that man.
So
smooth,
good.
But also savage.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
it needs
which
to
is such a good way to put it. Smooth
yeah.
and savage. Yeah.
Like which also is,
yeah. too. Smooth and savage.
What's the name of my next album?
I know that.
There's like,
it's the name of my next comedy special.
There you go. But
it's the utterant album comedy special.
It's the phrase that keeps coming. But what I like about, like, the smooth and savage approach is, I mean, that brings it down to so many really great villains. Like, you know, Fisk and Dr. Doom,
mm-hmm.
like,
mm-hmm.
both try to act like they're these aristocratic, very, very dapper,
mm-hmm.
very sophisticated people. And when you just scratch the surface, when you piss them off past a certain point, no, they are brutal, horrible monsters.
Yeah.
And we're getting a glimpse of that, like, someone who's acting very cool and, like, he's in control. But, man... if something threatens that control.
I mean,
like Superman Returns. Oh, okay. Okay, but I mean the one with Kevin Spacey and Lex Luthor. Yeah. Okay. So he's Lex Luthor. I was so happy that he was Lex Luthor. But the moment when he's like, exactly. You know exactly what I'm talking about. He's like, just say it. Just say it one time for me. Just say it. You're never going to get it. I am going to get away with it.
Yeah, it's like, wrong! Yes. Yeah, when you get to see, that's when the real, the real monster comes out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that he's always covered in blood. Like, in half the shots you see, he's just, like, covered in other people's blood. And I just, like, that is vicious. Like, and, like, when you see that, and then you hear him say to Luke Cage, like, oh, you want a war? I'm going to bring a war. It's just like, oh, that dude's going to bring a war.
Well, the beautiful thing about Netflix is they have 13 hours. They've really done it, and I've said this before, that the villains are just as important as the heroes. And it's the villain's story as much as the heroes. And the villain gets almost as much, if not more, screen time than the hero.
And
you have to have someone like this. You have to have someone that's got smooth savageness. You've got to have someone that's that talented smooth of an actor. Savage. You've got to have someone that's really, like, investable as a as a viewer. You need to have someone that you can, like, fully care about for 13 hours. And we've seen 30 seconds, and I want to know as much about him as Luke Cage.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the movies have been failing.
The Marvel movies don't have villains as strong as...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they're there, but so many of them are generic.
Right.
And
this guy doesn't have great minions, I guarantee it. And there will not be a portal in space we have to deal with.
I'm so done with portals in space.
No floating garbage in the sky, guaranteed.
Yes.
The show looks great. It looks gritty. It looks like we talked about, like, the soundtrack feeling the tone and vice versa. The soundtrack.
My God. Itching. Just the soundtrack in the trailer.
Yeah.
Is just like, it is so dead on. Like, it's, and like, that's like sets the tone for the entire series. And I'm just like, this is it. Like, this is so good. It looks so good.
Yeah.
And just like, just hearing it, I'm just like so on board.
And the fact is, you know, the comic books are serialized storytelling. So they lend themselves very nicely to a series, a TV series. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, the TV series, partly because they don't have the same budget, have to have the heroes have more creative solutions than just we punch them until we're done punching them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, is a failure in the movies to me, that now we've had so many where a lot of them just end with, and then he punched him really hard and it was done.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, no, Daredevil can't just punch Kingpin until he's done. Like, he had to get this evidence. He had to get that cop.
He had to take down the Empire.
He had to take down the soldiers. He had to convince this cop to talk.
With that, it becomes very satisfying to see them punch him.
Yes.
Because then they've earned it, and that's like the kill. That's like the final blow to everything else that they've done.
It's part of a larger plan.
Yes. Yeah.
I remember the scene of Punisher talking to Kingpin in the prison yard more than I remember all of Avengers: Age of Ultron. No offense to Joss Whedon and Avengers: Age of Ultron, but I remember the images of, like, these conversations that you've waited your whole
life
you.
For. It stuck with you.
I remember
it's more relatable.
Reading Punisher as a kid, reading Kingpin as a kid, you wanted that to happen, and we knew in the show Punisher's here. I didn't know Kingpin was in the show. They kept it under wraps for me. I actually didn't know going in. As soon as Kingpin showed up, I was like, oh, I've waited my whole life. And then, like, that scene is seared into my brain beautifully, whereas we earned the fight later on with the Kingpin moving like he did in the freaking animated series. That was all warranted because, like you said, the budget. And because Netflix has more time.
A limited budget and certain time constraints will force you to be more creative.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
We've seen that's since filming has begun for movies and TV.
And we gave them 13 hours of time so we could invest. That's the difference between, like, they had to cut Ultron down to nothing. These things can stretch and make it malleable. That's why Luke Cage looks great, because this would not be a story I'd want to see in 2 hours. I want 13 hours of this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what did you guys... I know we've briefly touched on it, but Misty Knight, like, how do we feel about Simone Missick?
Oh my God!
We've barely seen it. But,
like, comic book character come to life. That was really... That, to me, it reminded me when Hugh Jackman walked into X-Men 1 in that cage fight. I was like, oh my God.
That's Wolverine.
They developed the technology to bring a comic book character to life. How did this happen? Like, that's what I felt when I saw Misty Knight.
It's really dark there, but, like, that's her... Like, this is the scene of her running through the hall.
The way she was moving, the way she's, like, commanding her presence. I'm like, yes!
Yeah, like, you see her, I think, twice in this trailer. And the first time you really see her, she's, like, dressing down Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Like,
she's no one's sidekick.
Yeah.
No, she's Misty Knight.
She's like, you might be bulletproof, but Harlem ain't. And then she's like, oh my God, she's right. And she's like...
That's the beautiful thing that this... I love when our superhero stories, like, deal with consequence for what's happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when... You know, Daredevil season 2. Mm-hmm. You had constant discussions about, did Daredevil engender an environment in which the Punisher happens? Mm-hmm. Or is this just an unrelated event and things sometimes converge? And I love that you have the discussion, and you love that, you know, what is the message it's giving to the community if Daredevil has to be the guy bringing people in instead of the cops? And
right.
This is going with that great themes. Jessica Jones is all about consequence, mm-hmm. and trying in some cases to avoid consequence.
Well, I think Marvel is about consequence. Like, Marvel's done a really good job being like, hey, we did this bad stuff. We should really fix.
Yeah.
Like, that's the beauty of it. These shows just have more time to invest verbally. Yeah.
You didn't like blow up a city and then like act sad, then the next scene you're laughing while you take out a government drone. It's mm-hmm. a completely different thing. You wanted to say something.
They recognize that actions don't exist in a vacuum, and super actions definitely don't exist in a vacuum.
Absolutely.
And they deal with that. With, like, with Jessica Jones, like, with the first episode, and they're saying about, like, oh, yeah, you know, those other guys with what they did. Like, okay, great, yes, because it's a ripple effect, and that's a gigantic ripple effect.
The New York incident they referenced all of Daredevil, that cost them $0. They had a line of dialogue.
Oh, God!
See, that cost us more.
Yeah, that cost us more.
She has done what no villain has done. She has defeated the Silver Surfer.
She toppled him on his...
It's okay. It's okay. Wow, that actually kind of scared me.
You puss. What?
Matt,
this is my show.
Get out.
So I will point out, we did not see Misty Knight with a metal arm. Do you think that we will see that at the end of the season?
I think that's going to happen in her own spinoff thing. No. I mean, it's going to happen here. It's going to be like a really big melodramatic, you know, like point where it's going to happen, and it's going to affect Luke Cage. It's going to affect her. It's going to change the entire dynamic of everything.
I mean, there are two ways you can play it. One, you can play it as it's already an artificial arm and she's got skin on it, and that'll be a revelation later. Like, someone will come at her with a knife and she'll block it with the arm and like, what? And it's like, no, this arm's metal and Tony Stark made it for me because I lost mine in a bomb blast. Or the way I would prefer is if that is her arm and she does lose it over the course of the story, because another thing that we haven't seen much in the adaptations is someone dealing with a new disability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't want that arm to be replaced in the next episode.
Exactly. Let's
see her have to deal with it the whole season.
Let's have some Furiosa without the arm.
Well, also, like, this is, again, what Jessica Jones did so well is, like, there are shows that'll bring in a character suffering rape, and the next episode, they seem to be largely over it. They're pissed, but they're moving on with their lives already, and just like, you know, well, you know, this villain raped me, and we have to stop him. But, like, you could have, if you insert that line with, this villain robbed my checking account, it would have the same emotional thing. Whereas Jessica Jones dealt with, how does this really affect you? And how
psychologically,
and what do you do? And how do, like, different people react to different traumas different ways? That was all Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that also without us participating in it by seeing it happen was really great. And so that's why I'm saying, like, what I think we're both agreeing, like, it would be great to see her adjust to that, to see her adjust to not having an arm. And even if she gets an artificial arm, it's not her arm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And things in her life have changed. And right now there are no heroes dealing with a disability in any of the Marvel Studios films.
Mm-hmm.
Other than there's Daredevil in Daredevil, but even he, like, has that advantage of certain powers. And in season two, they don't go into the limitations too much, except for the hand ninjas.
Yeah.
I feel like the limitations he had were stronger in season one, actually. But, you know, whereas Charles Xavier, like, was in a wheelchair, but we didn't really see him adjusting to that. And actually, the movie that could have dealt with that had him occasionally take a drug. Apparently a drug can repair the fact that part of my bones were destroyed by a bullet. Like,
dude, that bothered me so much.
It bothered me so much.
Like, literally took me out of the hole.
So I would love to see, like, this positive dealing with disability.
Yeah. I totally agree with that.
Before we move on from Luke Cage, can I talk about The Moment?
Yeah.
We haven't talked about
The Moment. I know exactly what you're talking about.
No, that was actually, like, that's my next thing I wanted to talk about.
It
the
has
experiment.
To be mentioned. Yeah. My God, is that awesome.
Like, well, nice. Not only does he have the tiara, but he's also got, like,
the
braces.
He's like just Luke Cage.
Like, I remember, like, I watched it for the first time this morning,
and was like, oh man, this is like, I can't, this trailer's so pitch perfect, I love it so much. And then I watched it a couple more times, and it took me like two or three viewings to full, like, to actually be like, wait, oh my god, it's a tiara,
because I saw the, I saw the braces, and then my brain went click click click, tiara, and it had already moved on, and I was like, I have to see it again.
It's
so cool.
It's so, so for those of you who don't know, like, when Luke Cage first came out in Heroes for Hire, what was it, 74, 75, or later, Alan? Do you remember?
I mean, Luke Cage came out in 72.
Oh, it's even earlier. Okay, so 72. But
Hero,
but
he, he came out, like, as Luke Cage, Hero for Hire.
Yeah.
And so then later...
And then him and Iron Fist got together.
Right, they got together around, like, 75.
Okay,
because so his comic book was doing poorly, and so they decided to team him up with Iron Fist, who also wasn't doing that great.
Yeah.
And so you actually had... I mean, it's funny because both were such cultural heroes of the time, because you had one being a reaction to all the martial arts films that were becoming popular.
Yeah.
And one being a reaction to the blaxploitation.
Mm-hmm.
And you combined them and made this really fun and buddy comedy.
It was like chocolate and peanut butter.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, interestingly, Iron Fist was the chocolate. That's really what's
interesting. Yes, that's so actually,
weird. It's so weird. Actually, yeah. But he had a tiara. He wore a yellow shirt and a chain and a tiara.
As you
as
do.
Power Man.
As you do when you're trying to keep a low profile as a bounty hunter.
Oh, yeah. I hope he fights with a chain like Daredevil did in season 2.
He's going to fight with a chain.
I didn't even think of how excited that's going to make me. But, chain fighting is my favorite.
Also, there was the great shot of him, like, when he saved, like, that couple from, like, he was like, don't worry, I'm here, I'm watching.
I've got you.
I've got you, yeah. Like, he turns around and he's got, like, the
hoodie.
Yellow
hood.
The yellow's the lining of it. It's just, like, such a wonderful, subtle nod. Like, I love
that. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, there it is.
I mean, I love those little touches, like when with Bruce Banner in Avengers having a purple shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, it's not as weird as purple pants. Mm-hmm. But it lets you know that little it's that little hint. It's that little,
hint.
It's that little love. Paying attention.
It's that little love for the comic book fans.
Yeah.
But I mean, and Misty Knight, actually, there's an interesting thing. There's a constant debate about when she first appeared.
Oh,
because,
interesting.
Because, so she technically first appeared in 75 in Marvel Premiere, I think issue 20.
Sure.
And that's when she was created and she was introduced. But then John Byrne later retroactively identified her with an unnamed character who had appeared in Marvel Team Up in 72. There's a woman in there in one of the scenes who looked a lot like Misty Knight and was just didn't have a name in the story. She wasn't a major thing there. So John Byrne later said, "Oh yeah, that was Misty Knight. You just didn't know it." So like retroactively, her first appearance is in 72.
But not for real, though.
But not for real, no. But people will often list, like, oh yeah, she first appeared in Marvel Team Up in 72. It's like, not really. It's the same thing with Jessica Jones. I mean, she first appears, really, she's created in Alias issue 1.
Yeah.
But Bendis later revealed that she went to high school with Peter Parker and showed a flashback using the Steve Ditko panel of, I think it was Spider-Man issue 4, when Sandman first appears. And at one point, they're fighting one of Peter Parker's classrooms, and Brian Michael Bendis pointed to one of the characters that Steve Ditko had drawn in the background, and it's like, oh, that's Jessica Jones when she's younger. So, like, retroactively, her first appearance is in Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man issue 4.
But not for real.
But not for real.
But not for real. Yeah. No, that's one of my favorite things about Jessica
Jones. But I love that ultimate Jessica Jones knowing Spider-Man growing up. I loved in the Avengers where, like, Peter Parker had a crush on Jessica Jones because of that retroactive, like, origin thing. I thought that was great.
Jessica Jones had a huge crush on Peter Parker. And I loved is, like, Luke Cage is, like, laughing, like, you had a crush on this nerd?
Yeah.
And then Jessica's talking, like, doesn't even hear this, talking to Peter, like, oh my god, I was so in love with you. And Luke is like, wait.
Like,
was it a crush or love?
Dude,
those are different things.
That
like, really?
You're so good.
You're threatened by freaking Peter Parker.
No, that's so funny. So let's also talk about the experiment very quickly. In the comics, it was Dr. Bernstein. I can't remember the guy's first name, but I think it was Dr. Bernstein who was doing an experiment, like a super soldier experiment.
Yeah.
He was doing it in prison secretly.
Yeah. And this was after Luke Cage had been arrested for... Well, he was framed for heroin.
He was framed for heroin possession.
Yeah, he was already... He had been convicted. He was in prison.
Yeah. And, like, was, like, not a good prisoner. Because he was, like... He was framed. He knew he was framed.
Innocent.
Yeah. Very angry, like, trying to get out. And then I think Reva...
Which is fantastically
while he
topical,
was in there. Yeah.
Frankly. Like
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And, actually, they later... They made a very... clear and literal through line between Luke Cage and the Super Soldier project that made Captain America. In the Marvels project, you see... They brought back, there was an old Marvel hero of, like, I forget if his name was, like, John Steele or something.
Yeah.
But he had superhuman strength. And they talked about how they used studying him and his biology, that became part of the Super Soldier Operation Rebirth project. Yeah. But then one of the scientists went on his own to sort of really focus on the strength mm-hmm. and resistance to injury. And his son is the scientist who then works on Luke Cage later.
Oh, interesting.
So Operation Rebirth, like, once again, Captain America has these ripples yeah. that have affected the Marvel universe. All right,
so we've got to move on, but I just wanted to say, like, the experiment goes wrong in prison because of sabotage mm-hmm. by prison guards who hate Luke Cage, and he accidentally gets that and then escapes prison, and everyone thinks he's dead, and that's probably why he's trying to lay low, because he's an escaped convict.
So. Right. And let's, you know, be honest, he probably has indestructible underwear now.
I mean, you got
because
to.
Because as you see,
that's right?
you
got
it
to.
Has you got to.
Yeah.
You got it to. Just makes sense.
So let's talk very briefly about Thor Ragnarok before we answer questions from our fans and do our shout-outs. The Kotati and Mantis are rumored to be appearing in Thor Ragnarok. What do you think? First of all, okay, so the Kotati are a species that coexists on Hollow with
smart
the Kree.
Plants. They're smart,
yeah, they're smart plants.
Plants.
Like, they're hyper-intelligent plants.
If there's anywhere with
weird
mouths that look like butts.
Thor yeah. Ragnarok.
There are space.
Oh, man, they do. I can't unsee that. Yeah. Oh,
you're welcome.
It's our space.
You're yeah. welcome.
That's all I got now.
You're welcome.
I think if there's anywhere for them in the Marvel Universe other than Guardians, it's here. Like,
yeah.
in the
yeah,
MCU, I mean.
Because Thor Ragnarok is going to
be weird.
I mean, yeah.
I mean,
so weird. And then with them, we get the Kree. I mean, we'd have to, right?
Yeah. Well, we already have the Kree, but like...
Well, yeah, a little bit.
But they, so the priests of Pama, or is it Pama? I always said Pama. Priests of Pama. The priests of Pama are a pacifist Kree sect who, like, coexist peacefully with the Kotati, and they all get off planet. They end up on Earth, where they discover Mantis.
Who's like the celestial mother?
They declare her the celestial Madonna, who will give birth to the celestial...
Jesus,
the celestial Messiah.
They didn't say Jesus,
but we know.
I
don't think that's going
to
happen.
They're going to go there, but they probably will do something with the Kotati and Mantis, and maybe how Mantis is actually from Earth. But I don't think she's going to be so.
Oh, but like Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's. I can see them taking sort of a more. I mean, one of the things that they did with Thor was they really focused on the original idea that these are aliens. Yeah. Who are worshipped as gods, not mm-hmm. literally gods.
Yeah.
And so I could easily see them as, it's not necessarily that, if she's in it, it's not necessarily that Mantis is the celestial Madonna, but there are priests who believe she
is something, yeah.
or represents that, you know, in the same way that, you know, a Catholic priest, when he steps into a confessional, is supposed to be, at that moment, representative of voice box for God.
Yeah.
You know, can we prove that with science or something? No, you can disbelieve it if you want. But this is the cultural belief of that system.
Yeah.
So I see them playing it more on that. I mean, I don't really know what to expect from Ragnarok, because it's such...
Ragnarok is so out there, dude. Like, all the stuff that I saw at Comic-Con, it's just like... It's like, I've said this before, if I weren't already excited for Doctor Strange, Ragnarok would be the one I was most excited for right now. Because it just looks so, it is so out there, and so I don't know what to think about it.
I always worry when things look like they might be doing too much. But Marvel's done, with a couple of exceptions, mm-hmm. like, done a pretty good job of balancing a lot of things. Yeah. So,
Donald Glover just came out and had a comment on his character in Spider-Man Homeconing.
What did he say?
He can't say who it is. Obviously, he's sworn to secrecy. But, quote, it was kind of an accident. It really wasn't out there trying to do that. I felt like an internet just kind of did that for me. But it was cool because now I get to see from the inside a lot of that stuff, which is all you can ask for as a fan of something. If they were shooting in Colorado, I probably still would have gone. But being in Atlanta, it was kind of like icing on the cake. It was nice. So, he's saying as a fan, he gets to see from both sides. And that no matter what, he would have been there. So... this concludes rumors of giant part. There's no way he was ever going to be, but the fact that he was just conveniently around and the internet kind of got him into this situation.
Okay.
So it's probably a small part, probably a teacher, probably something in the school, but the fact that I love that he's saying, like, I was a fan and now I get to see it from the inside. That's really cool.
Nice.
For me.
So cool.
So at the TTAs, he was probably promoting his show Atlanta, and he's in Atlanta. They were filming in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Donald Glover's like, hey, perfect. I'm from Atlanta. So I love Spider-Man. So I love that. That's really cool. That comment just came out.
So let's very quickly, I also wanted to throw out the Priest of Pama also trained Moondragon, and it would be cool if we started getting... Moondragon.
Right. I mean, we've already had Thor make a connection to Guardians of the Galaxy, because Thor, the Dark World, ended with going to the Collector
mm-hmm.
and had Sif and Volstagg stand in front of Adam Warlock's cocoon in a display case. The cocoon that was then open in the stinger scene of Guardians of the Galaxy. And yeah, so you're sort of assembling actually members of the Infinity Watch. Because if you're talking about Hala a lot, then you're talking about Moondragon.
Oh my god, I hadn't even thought about Infinity Watch.
And you're talking about... I would love to see Adam Warlock. Yeah. I have a great soft spot for Adam Warlock. Yeah. So, all right. Yeah.
I hate that I have to skibbity-boo, but we've got a skibbity-bop on. And say that a Quinjet was also spotted on the set. We've got a picture of it. Doesn't necessarily mean anything, but like I think it would be really cool if when we meet Bruce Banner or Hulk, it's actually that scene from Age of Ultron, but it's like it's the other side of it. So we see that one last thing where he turns around and he doesn't fit in the Quinjet, and it's like one of the saddest like bum 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 kind of moments for Hulk. I would love to see like the reverse of that and then see like the Grandmaster kidnapping him like soon after the events of Age of Ultron. Nice. Like that's what I'm like dying to see.
Yeah. And Jeff Goldblum's just like hee-hee.
Yeah. Oh my god. He's like such a great Grandmaster. Hulk will find a way.
I just hope we meet him laying on a couch shirt and Grandmaster.
Hulk like running behind Grandmaster and he's in a Jeep and he's like, must go faster, must go faster. So that's it for Thor Ragnarok, as much as I could talk about it forever. Let's move on to our fans. JJ Johnson at Actor J says, my 51st birthday is Thursday, been a comic geek longer than the panel has been alive. Boom, happy birthday. Shout out to JJ Johnson. The Kistler is taking a sip of water for you.
The toast. Did we briefly mention that Loki got an Instagram? And
he Instagrammed and he's like, I'm back on set. Yeah.
Tom Hiddleston.
I mean, I didn't look at that picture. Odin is Loki right now. Yeah. So Odin Loki. Yeah, we're going to have to deal with that.
Figuring that out. But it's exciting. I'm having him confirmed in the costume. Yeah, definitely. Exciting for me.
And Zach, I need you to double check your email. I just sent you a picture about 20 minutes ago. But Jerry Lopez at Corn Raiders says, would love a shout out this week, marrying my best friend.
Real cute.
So, like, they're getting married this week. I've got a couple pictures from their Instagram we're pulling up right now.
Real cute.
So we'll show those in just one second. Let me move on, though. Koi, well, the whole panel, but, like, they specifically said you.
Called me out.
Yeah. At CBNSC803, if Guy Ritchie were to do a Marvel property, what would it be?
Oh, I love Guy Ritchie.
Okay, so hold on. Here, this is Corn Raiders Jerry Lopez. This is his lovely wife, or soon-to-be wife. So,
they look so happy.
Cuteness.
Look, they dress as like so Groot and Star Lord. Oh, it's the best.
And there's a Deadpool. Oh, you guys killing it.
You guys are killing it. Yeah. Good work. Well done. Good work.
Congratulations.
Well played.
Happy wedding. Happy wedding. I will know what that's like in about 3 months. Oh my god. Okay. So much to do. So a Guy Ritchie were to do a congratulations. Giant congratulations to you guys. If Guy Ritchie were to do a Marvel property, what would it be? We've got to be out in 5 minutes, so hurry.
My god. You know what I'd want, honestly? X-Force.
Ooh.
His kinetic action style, his ability to juggle a lot of characters, his diverse casting, his use of different cultural zeitgeist, like in Snatch. I think having a team movie would be really great for him. Yeah. I think X-Force would be great. And I think he could handle that many characters that are that weird. Because he doesn't believe in weird. He just makes really cool stuff. And his action with Sherlock was perfect. And maybe X-Force for me.
X-Force, not a bad idea.
Nice.
Do either one of you guys have an answer?
I love Guy Ritchie.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe New Warriors.
Similar vein.
Or if they had the rights that they could do this, new Fantastic Four.
Oh my god!
As in Wolverine, Ghost Rider, Hulk, and Spidey.
1997's Fantastic Four.
Exactly.
Oh my god!
It was like the team that should not be working together.
They would never do that movie. It'd be amazing.
I would love that. I love that.
Adam Means at the Dark Knight, Knight in Seven says, got to say your show makes me feel good. Look forward to it every week. We look forward to you, Adam Means. Thank you for saying so. Peter Campbell at DTFan07 says, love the show. Watch every week via catch up in the UK. He's a 55-year-old Marvel fan. Best wishes and thank you for your work. Peter Campbell, we love you. Thank you for saying that. That's very nice of you. Teresa Luz. So super fan Teresa Luz, by the way, who's always talking to us, retweeted a tweet asking if we'd heard this rumor from Mask and Hammer Rumor, in very loose terms, but Nick Offerman from Parks and Rec may have been offered the role of J. Jonah Jameson.
I want that so bad.
That would be the best rumor ever.
Totally fine with it.
If you've never read any of Nick Offerman's books, they'll make your life better. The two books he's published are incredible. Gumption and Paddle Your Own Canoe made me a better person.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nick Offerman.
Because he was terrible.
I was just the worst. I was on the street doing blow out of a corner. No, he's amazing.
So true. Very true. That's where Matt found me. You still do that.
He only did that in bathrooms.
Just on Tuesdays. Very nice bathrooms.
Obviously.
Daniel Webb at Dr. Webb 22 asks, how do I get on the Cosmic Couch for a live show? Tweet at it. Like, just ask it. Like, if you live in Los Angeles, send us a, just PM us. We'll talk with you. Ashley Hutchins at Hushley at Ashley Hutchins.
Cut. Try it again.
Skip it, skip it. Do you think Marvel would get a major name to be the voice of Searcher in Thor Ragnarok?
Yes. Because everyone's wanting to work with Marvel.
It's going
to
be me.
Alan Kiss. Like,
hey, you heard it here first,
Thor,
everybody.
Thor.
Key confirms Alan fan is cast in.
I think it'll be Al Pacino.
Ooh. Hoo-ah!
Hoo-ah, I'm certain.
He's just basically the devil's advocate character.
Yeah, the
again.
Whole time.
I should have taken a flamethrower to this place. That's my arm, by
I'm
the way.
I'm the devil's advocate. I am the devil's advocate here.
I'm also the devil. Trump Surtur. It's like, look, Midgard, this place. No, we're going to get rid of it. We're going to get rid of it.
You're fired.
I have the best fire demons. All the fire demons are mine.
Lone Wolfpack 04 at Lone Wolfpack 04, just eating some pancakes and watching at Matt Key and Koi Jandro talk about Marvel. Good on you. All I want is Koi Jandro to Koi cast a potential Moon Knight show. Who is Mark Spector? Koi who? And that is from at Hoot 86.
And I've said Remy Malek before, and I think he's great. I'd love the kid from Mr. Robot. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be an incredible Moon Knight.
Oh my god, he would be great.
Right? I mean, he's got the depth. He's got the look. He's young. I think he'd be weird. He seems unhinged in the right way. Also unhinged in the right way. And this is not a joke. It's actually serious. Ben Foster would be a good Moon Knight. I think Ben Foster is just the right amount of crazy.
Okay, sure.
You know what? He's great, man. He's got two movies coming out this year.
Victor Rosario for Kree Captain Marvel and Captain Marvel, who do we cast? DiCaprio, Pitt, Ham, like as Marvel, like actual, like the Kree warrior Marvel.
As Marvel, Idris Elba.
Ooh. My brain went Spider Ham when they said Ham. Now seeing John Ham, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
You were asking who would cast like, Spider Ham.
No, I was like, Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Spider Ham. What does he have to do with anything?
All right, so we've got to close it off.
I've got a couple iTunes shout-outs that are really good.
Do it.
iTunes, fast. Last week, Anakin J.K. Gatsby, I want to give that love again because I loved your comments saying that we're the group of nerd friends you wish you had. We are a nerd friend. Welcome to
us,
man.
You're a nerd friend.
We appreciate that. Victor Onomy left us an amazing comment. Long, too long to read, but very good, and I read it, and it was great, and I appreciate it. The Eric Opperman, I talk to you all the time online stuff, so you're an awesome dude, and you're also a nerd bro, which you say is rare. I agree. People go to the gym and read comics at the same time. Very rare, very important. Keep it up. Awesome podcast from Daniel J.M. Jones 007. I appreciate you listening to us in your 40-minute commute to work. We try to keep the show around there so you can enjoy it, but on the way back, 2-hour show, they happen sometimes. And lastly, Donald Blake, MD, your name is awesome, and you clearly like comics, and you like us, and I appreciate it. And a new one today, best hype man ever. No Soulstone Koi, as Billy Joel put it, it's all about the soul. I Soulstone's where it's at, and you guys are awesome. Thank you for those 5-star reviews.
Yeah, you guys are the best. Wow, you were fast. You're a superstar.
I didn't imagine.
We gotta wrap up. Okay. Alan, very quickly, where can we find you?
Archives of my work are at alankissler.com. You can follow me on Twitter at sizzlerkissler. You can find my books on Barnes & Noble and also on my website. And the podcast Crazy Geeks is on SoundCloud and iTunes. New episode September 1st.
And Kissler is spelled KISTLER.
Indubitably.
Okay. Markea.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Markea McCarty, MarkeiaMccarty. Snapchat is Darth Thinmints. And a show that I do for AfterBuzz, I do WWE Raw, so you can talk wrestling or Sailor Moon Crystal with me.
Oh my God. That's so awesome. Koi?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Koi Jandro, CoiJandreau. I've got a VR short. I shot a 360 VR thing that's coming out in the next couple months. It's going to be awesome. I'll let you know when that happens. And if you're in LA in October, by any chance, we're doing the Rocky Horror Hipster Show. We're doing a weekend at the end of October. We're also doing a tech week in the middle of October, so you can see it any time in there. And it's going to be crazy and wonky, and it's the third year in a row. It's insane. Love you guys.
And I'm Matt Key at The Matt Key. You can find me on Twitter, where I'm not very active, but I try to be. Like I probably tweet like 3 times a week.
Since joining.
I have a total of 4 tweets. I also do the Kevin Smith show every once in a while. I think we're recording next week, so look forward to that. And skibbity skibbity, we'll see you next week.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.
All right, hey. All right, good job, guys. Let's just not come in tomorrow. Let's just take a day.